Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey there, Herman and Corin. So I'm just beginning to listen to your episode about the history of intelligence as a formal discipline in the sense that we have institutions. And as you put it at the start of the podcast, I think a very interesting way to look at it, as Herman was articulating, is that it used to be a person rather than an institution. And you mentioned the diplomatic pouch. And of course, here is yet another weird thing that we can talk about, or obscure thing, perfect material for the My Weird Prompts podcast. The diplomatic pouch is a mechanism used to shuttle materials between diplomatic missions and their and the countries that operate them. And I guess the word diplomatic pouch kind of makes you think of literally a pouch that someone is carrying, you know, clutching to their body on a flight or something. And what I find very interesting is that countries have attempted to stretch the definition of a diplomatic pouch enormously at times. I believe there's been cases, and maybe this is routine, Herman Poppleberry can let us know, where countries have asserted that full-on 20-foot containers, the types you see being loaded and offloaded onto cargo ships, are diplomatic pouches. I once saw a diplomatic pouch in real life, and I got very excited because I was waiting to check in, just, you know, the regular chump line going into the economy class ticket. And next to me, there was, this was in Israel, at Ben Gurion Airport. Next to me, there was some lady from security speaking to a couple of guys dressed in regular clothing. Nothing extraordinary about the scene, but they had this big bag with kind of very distinctive wrapping around it, and it said "diplomatic pouch." I believe it was Romania. So I was like, "Oh, that's actually diplomatic pouch." I've no idea what happened after that. I presume it was some kind of routine check-in or inspection. But the fundamental concept of the diplomatic pouch being that it's immune from inspection because it's used by diplomats. But I believe that there is much more to it than that. Here's what else I know about the subject, so that Herman can build upon my knowledge and we can learn more about this. I believe that they're constantly being ferried back and forth. Like, it's not an occasional thing that a diplomatic pouch is sent, but there's a constant drum of it. Now, I guess it really asks begs the question, given that modern communications are so sophisticated and, countries have a huge amount of ways to remain in electronic communication with their countries, what is it exactly that needs to be conveyed in the diplomatic pouch? Seems to be, from its occasional mention in the news, still very much, it's not a relic of the past, it's still in use in diplomacy. And I'd be intrigued to know, what exactly might those Romanian diplomats have been under that strange-looking velvety red bag that I saw at the airport? Herman and Corin, over to you.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, the man who probably has more tabs open in his brain than a chrome window on a high-end workstation. It is a bit chilly in here today, Herman. I think the Jerusalem winter is finally catching up with us.
Herman Poppleberry, at your service. And you are not wrong about the tabs, Corn. Though today, one of those tabs is glowing particularly bright because of our housemate Daniel. He sent us an audio clip earlier today that really caught my attention. He was listening back to our episode on the history of intelligence, which I believe was episode 329, and he caught that mention of the diplomatic pouch. He was actually at Ben-Gurion Airport recently and saw a Romanian one being loaded onto a plane, and it got him thinking.
Right, the diplomatic pouch. It is one of those terms that sounds like it belongs in a black and white spy movie from the 1950s, does it not? Like something a guy in a trench coat would be clutching while boarding a steamship. But Daniel's question is actually very modern. He wants to know why these things still exist. In an era where we have end-to-end encryption, satellite uplinks, and instant global communication, what is so sensitive or so physical that it has to be put in a bag in hand, carried across borders in the year 26?
It is a fantastic question because it touches on the intersection of international law, physical security, and the limits of digital trust. I think most people have this image of a small leather satchel, maybe with a wax seal on it. And while those do exist, the reality of the diplomatic pouch in 26 is much more, well, let us say it is more industrial than you might think. It is not just about letters anymore, it is about the very hardware that makes the modern world run.
So, Herman, let us start with the basics for anyone who did not catch episode 329. What is the legal magic that makes a pouch a pouch? Because if I just put a sticker on my backpack that says diplomatic bag, I am pretty sure the TSA is still going to want to see my laptop.
You would be correct, Korn. The magic comes from the Vienna Convention on Diplomatic Relations of 1961, specifically Article 27. It states that the diplomatic bag shall not be opened or detained. That is a massive deal in the world of international relations. It means that once an item is officially designated as a diplomatic pouch and has the visible external marks of its character, it is essentially a piece of sovereign territory in motion. No customs official, no border guard, and no police officer is allowed to look inside. It is a total black box of international transit.
Not even an X-ray. I mean, surely in 26, with all the security concerns at airports, they have to scan them for explosives or something?
That is where it gets spicy. The treaty says it shall not be opened or detained. It does not explicitly mention X-rays because, well, it was 1961. Most countries today agree that scanning them with X-rays is a violation of the spirit of the treaty, though some countries still try to push the envelope. But generally, if a country insists on X-ray in a pouch, the sending country can just refuse and take the bag back home. There was actually a major incident in 1984 in London, known as the Saint-Saint. James's Square incident, where a machine gun was likely smuggled into the Libyan embassy in a pouch. Even then, the British authorities could not legally open the bags leaving the embassy after the siege. It shows just how absolute this protection is.
That is wild. So we have this black box that no one can legally peek into. In the past, this was obviously for letters and code books. But today, if I want to send a message to an embassy in London, I can use a high-level encrypted channel. Why am I still sending a physical bag?
Because, Korn, as we have discussed in previous episodes, digital security is only as good as the hardware it runs on. If you are a government and you need to set up a secure station in a foreign capital, you cannot just walk into a local electronics store and buy a server. You have no idea if that server has been tampered with at the factory level. You do not know if there is a hardware-level keylogger or a backdoor in the firmware. This is what we call the supply chain attack.
Ah, so the pouch is the secure supply chain. It is like the ultimate anti-tamper seal.
Exactly. In 26, a huge portion of what goes into those pouches is hardware. We are talking about specialized routers, air-gapped laptops, and hardware security modules, or HSMs. These are the devices that manage the actual cryptographic keys for the government's entire communication network. If you want to be 100% sure that your encryption has not been compromised before you even turn the machine on, you have to physically transport it from your home soil to the embassy. You put it in the pouch, you have a diplomatic courier watch it the entire way, and you ensure it never leaves their sight until it is behind the reinforced doors of the embassy's secure room.
That makes a lot of sense. It is the evil made attack protection. For those who do not know the term, it is the idea that if someone has physical access to your device for even a few minutes, they can compromise it in ways that software cannot detect. By using the pouch, you are preventing the evil maid from ever getting her hands on the equipment during transit. But what about interdiction? I have read that intelligence agencies sometimes intercept packages in the mail to install bugs.
Precisely. Agencies like the NSA or the GCHQ have been known to do exactly that with regular commercial shipments. They divert the package, carefully open it, install a tiny piece of surveillance hardware, and then reseal it so perfectly that the recipient never knows. The diplomatic pouch is the only legal way to prevent that. Because the host country cannot legally touch the bag, they cannot perform that kind of interdiction without causing a massive international incident. It is the only way to ensure that the laptop you sent is the same laptop that arrives.
So it is a lot of tech. But what about the weird stuff? Daniel mentioned the countries have stretched the definition of a pouch to include 20-foot shipping containers. Is that actually allowed? It seems like a bit of a stretch to call a massive metal box a bag.
It is, and it has been done. The Vienna Convention does not actually specify the size or weight of a diplomatic bag. It just says it must contain diplomatic documents or articles intended for official use. So, if a country is building a new embassy and they want to make sure the structural steel or the reinforced glass has not been tampered with, they can designate an entire shipping container as a diplomatic pouch. During the construction of the United States Embassy in Moscow back in the day, they actually had to ship in precast concrete and specialized building materials and pouches because they found the local materials were riddled with microphones.
Imagine the paperwork for a 20-foot pouch. That feels like a massive loophole for smuggling. If you can send a whole container without anyone looking inside, you could move anything.
Oh, it absolutely is. And history is littered with examples of countries abusing this. One of the most famous and most bizarre cases happened in 1984. It is known as the Deco Affair.
Oh, I have heard of this. This is the one where they tried to ship a person, right? Like a literal human being in a box?
Yes. A former Nigerian cabinet minister named Umaru Diko was living in exile in London. The Nigerian government wanted him back to face charges. So, they kidnapped him right off a London street, drugged him with a mixture of ketamine and halothane, and put him in a large wooden crate. They actually had a doctor with him in the crate to make sure he did not die from the drugs. They labeled the crate as a diplomatic bag and took it to Stansted Airport to be loaded onto a Nigerian cargo plane.
Wait, if it was a diplomatic bag, how did they get caught? You said they cannot be opened.
This is a perfect example of why the official marks are so important. The Nigerian officials at the airport made a critical mistake. They had not properly filled out the paperwork, and the crate was not clearly marked as a diplomatic bag in the way the law requires. Because of that, and because the police were already looking for Diko, the customs officials had the legal right to open it. When they did, they found a very groggy minister and a very surprised doctor. If they had just put the right stickers on it, the British authorities might have been legally powerless to stop that plane from taking off.
That is insane. Imagine being the customs officer opening a bag and finding a human being. It really shows the tension. Governments hate the fact that they cannot see inside these bags, but they all agree to it because they all want the same protection for their own secrets. It is a classic case of mutual interest.
It really is. And it is not just about kidnapped ministers. What about things that are legally sensitive but not necessarily top secret? One big thing is forensic evidence. If an embassy is involved in an investigation, let us say there was a crime committed on embassy grounds, they might need to send physical evidence back to their home country for analysis. DNA swabs, blood samples, or even physical objects that might have fingerprints. You cannot digitize a fingerprint on a shell casing and get the same level of legal chain of custody as you can by sending the physical object in a sealed diplomatic bag.
That is a great point. Chain of custody is everything in law. If it goes through a regular courier like DHL or FedEx, that chain is broken. Anyone could have tampered with it. But the diplomatic pouch is a continuous, legally protected chain. What about elections? I know people vote at embassies.
Exactly. When a country has an election, their citizens living abroad can often vote at the embassy. Those physical paper ballots are often sent back to the home country in diplomatic pouches to ensure no one can stuff the ballot box or destroy the votes during transit. It is a physical backup for democracy. And in 26, with all the concerns about digital election interference, having those physical paper trails moved via a secure pouch is more important than ever.
I had not thought about that. It is like the pouch is the ultimate air gap for the entire democratic process. Now, let us talk about the people who actually carry these things. Daniel mentioned seeing a Romanian one. But who are the people behind the bags? I have heard of the King's messengers in the United Kingdom.
Oh, the king's messengers are legendary. They have been around for centuries. I think the first recorded messenger was a man named John Norman, appointed by Richard III in 1485. They carry a very specific badge called the Silver Greyhound. The story goes that Charles II, while in exile, broke 4 silver greyhounds off a breakfast platter and gave them to his messengers so they could identify themselves to his supporters. Today, they are the elite couriers of the Foreign, Commonwealth, and Development Office. They fly around the world, often in business class, with a bag strapped to their wrist or sitting in the seat next to them.
Wait, they get their own seat for the bag? Is that a regular thing?
Often, yes. If the pouch is sensitive enough, the government will literally buy a ticket for the bag. It is a non-human passenger. The courier is responsible for it 24/7. They do not leave it in the overhead bin. They do not leave it with the flight attendants. It is right there with them. In the United States, it is the Diplomatic Courier Service, which is part of the State Department. They handle something like 5 million pounds of cargo every year. It is a massive logistics operation. They use everything from commercial flights to dedicated military transport.
5 million pounds! That is a lot of luggage! And you said they have been doing this since World War I?
Yes, the U.S. service was officially established in 1918 to handle the surge of communication during the war. Today, they have hubs all over the world, in places like Frankfurt, Bangkok, and Miami. These couriers are specialists. It is a career track in the Foreign Service. They have to be ready to travel at a moment's notice, often to very dangerous or unstable places, all to ensure that the bag arrives unopened.
You know, it is interesting to think about this in the context of our current year, 26. We are seeing more and more digital sovereignty movements. Countries wanting to keep their data within their own borders. But the diplomatic pouch is the ultimate expression of that, is it not? It is a way to move physical bits of your country through another country, without them ever touching the host nation's laws.
That is a very insightful way to put it, Korn. It is a physical tunnel through foreign space. And as our digital world becomes more fractured and more dangerous, I actually think the importance of the physical pouch is increasing, not decreasing. Especially because of the rise of quantum computing.
Why is that? You would think quantum computers would make everything faster and more digital.
It is the opposite, actually. We are currently in this transition period where everyone is worried about something called Harvest Now, Decrypt Later, or HNDL. The idea is that foreign adversaries are currently harvesting and storing encrypted digital traffic that they cannot read today, with the plan to decrypt it in a few years once they have a powerful enough quantum computer. So, if you are a government and you have a secret that needs to stay secret for 20 or 30 years, you cannot send it over the internet today, even with the best encryption.
So you go back to the sneakernet, you put the data on a hard drive, and you hand it to a guy with a silver greyhound on his tie.
Exactly. You put the data on a high-density, physically secure hard drive, you put that drive in a lead-lined diplomatic pouch to protect it from any unauthorized scanning, and you hand it to a courier. Physical transit is the only way to be absolutely certain that your data is not being intercepted by a passive listener who is just waiting for the technology to catch up. Passive listening does not work if there is no signal to listen to. It is like we are moving back toward the 19th century to protect ourselves from the 21st century.
That is brilliant. It is a cycle. The more sophisticated the intercept technology becomes, the more valuable the physical handoff becomes. I read a report recently that several major powers have actually increased their budget for diplomatic couriers in the last 2 years. They are sending more physical one-time pads and hard drives than they have in decades.
For those who do not know, a one-time pad is the only truly unbreakable encryption, but it requires both parties to have an identical physical key that is used only once. You cannot send that key over the internet because then it could be intercepted. You have to deliver it. So, the diplomatic pouch is the delivery vehicle for the world's most secure communication. It is the key to the kingdom.
This really reframes Daniel's question. It is not that the pouch is a relic. It is that it is the failsafe. When the digital world is too compromised to trust, the physical world is where we retreat. But we have to talk about the misuse again, because that is always the most entertaining part. We talked about the Nigerian kidnapping. But what about drug smuggling? I have heard rumors that certain countries use their pouches to move illicit goods to fund their operations.
Oh, it is more than rumors. There have been several documented cases. North Korea is often cited as the most frequent abuser. Because their economy is so isolated, they have been known to use their diplomatic immunity to smuggle everything from counterfeit $100 bills to high-grade methamphetamines and even endangered animal parts like rhino horns. It is a huge problem for law enforcement. If a North Korean diplomat walks through an airport in Africa with a bag that clearly smells like something suspicious, the local authorities are often powerless to stop them. If they open the bag, they have created an international incident. Most of the time, they just let them go to avoid the headache.
It is a get-out-of-jail-free card for luggage. And you mentioned a gold smuggling case in India, too.
Yes, that was a massive scandal in 2020 involving the United Arab Emirates consulate in Kerala, India. Customs officials there actually did seize a diplomatic bag because they had a very specific tip-off. Inside, they found over 30 kilograms of gold, worth about $2 million at the time. The fallout was huge and led to a massive investigation into a smuggling ring that was using the pouch status as a cover. It shows that while the treaty is meant to protect official use, the temptation to use it for private profit is always there.
It makes me wonder about the unspoken rules between countries. I imagine there is a lot of, I will not look in your bag if you do not look in mine. But surely there is a limit.
There is. It is called reciprocity. If country A starts being really difficult with country B's pouches, maybe they hold them up for inspection or they accidentally drop them and they break open, then country B will do the exact same thing to country A. It is a tit-for-tat system that keeps everyone mostly honest, because at the end of the day, everyone has something they want to keep secret. During the Cold War, the pouch was the primary way that spies would get equipment into a country. If you were a CIA officer in Moscow, you could not just buy a high-powered radio in a Russian store. All of that stuff came in the pouch. Sometimes they would even send specialized stones that were actually hidden containers for dead drops. They would send the rock in the pouch, and then the spy would go out and plant it in a park.
I love that. The pouch is not just a bag. It is the loading dock for the entire intelligence apparatus. Even today, with TSCM or technical surveillance countermeasures, those teams that look for bugs in embassies must have a lot of gear.
They do. They have incredibly sophisticated, heavy equipment. Spectrum analyzers, nonlinear junction detectors, these things are big and they look very suspicious. You do not want to explain to a foreign customs agent why you are bringing a device that can find hidden wires and walls. So, it all goes in the pouch. It is the only way to get the tools of the trade into the building without the host country knowing exactly what you were looking for.
So, to summarize for Daniel, the diplomatic pouch is still around because it is the only way to move physical objects with absolute legal and physical certainty. It is used for hardware that cannot be trusted if it is out of sight, for physical evidence that needs a perfect chain of custody, for ballots, for biological samples, and as a way to bypass the harvest now, decrypt later threat of future quantum computers.
Spot on. It is the ultimate analog solution to a digital problem. And as long as we have physical borders and physical things that matter, we are going to have people in business class with bags strapped to their wrists. It is the same reason why, even in 26, some of the most sensitive government meetings are still held in SCIFS, or Sensitive Compartmented Information Facilities, where you have to leave your phone in a lead box outside. No matter how good your encryption is, if there is a physical hole in your security, you are vulnerable. The pouch is the way you move the SCIF across the world.
You know, I am thinking about the future. Do you think we will ever see a digital diplomatic pouch? Like a legally protected tunnel on the internet that is treaty-bound to be uninspectable?
That is an interesting thought, but the problem is attribution and enforcement. On the internet, it is very hard to prove who is sending what in real time. If a country says this encrypted stream is a diplomatic pouch, how do you verify that without looking at it? With a physical bag, you can see the seals, you can see the courier, you can see the paperwork. You do not have to know what is inside to know it is a pouch. In the digital world, a pouch would just look like any other encrypted traffic. There is no way to distinguish a diplomatic document from a cyber attack without opening the packet. A physical bag cannot suddenly turn into a virus and infect your entire customs office, but a digital packet can. The physical nature of the pouch is actually its greatest security feature.
I love that. Security through friction. It is the opposite of everything we are taught about modern technology, where frictionless is the goal. In security, friction is your friend. If it is easy for you to do, it is easy for your enemy to do. The diplomatic badge is hard. It is expensive. It is slow. And that is exactly why it works.
Well, I think we have thoroughly unpacked the bag for Daniel. It is a lot more than just a pouch. It is a fundamental pillar of how the world functions behind the scenes. And hey, if any of our listeners have ever seen a diplomatic pouch in the wild, like Daniel did, we would love to hear about it. Or if you are a retired King's Messenger and you want to tell us some stories, anonymously of course, we are all ears.
Absolutely. You can get in touch with us through the form on our website at myweirdprompts.com. We read everything that comes in, and as you can see from today's episode, your questions really do drive the show. We have been doing this for a long time now, 332 episodes, and we are so grateful for the community that has grown around this show. If you have been listening for a while and you have not left us a review yet, we would really appreciate it if you could take a minute to do that on your podcast app or on Spotify. It genuinely helps other curious people find us.
It really does. We do not have a big marketing budget, we just have you guys and our own curiosity. And Daniel's weird prompts, let us not forget those.
Never. So, what is the takeaway for today, Herman? If someone is sitting at a bar and they want to sound smart about diplomatic pouches, what is the one thing they should say?
I would say, the diplomatic pouch is not a relic of the past. It is the ultimate insurance policy for the future. In a world where every bit and byte can be intercepted, the only way to be truly secure is to keep it physical.
Keep it physical. I like that. It is a good mantra for 26. Everything digital is ephemeral, but a 30-kilogram bag of gold or a crate with a kidnapped minister, those are very, very real.
Hopefully more of the former and less of the latter. One can only hope.
All right. I think that is a wrap for today. This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Korn.
And I am Herman Poppleberry. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
See ya.
Oh, and Korn?
Yeah?
Do you think we could designate our fridge as a diplomatic pouch? Then maybe Daniel would stop eating my leftovers.
I do not think half a pizza counts as an article for official use, Herman.
It is official to me. It is vital for my research.
Nice try. We will see you guys next time. Thanks again to Daniel for the prompt. We will have to see what he comes up with for next week. Probably something about the secret history of paperclips.
Don't give him ideas. Too late, he is probably already recording the audio. Stay curious.
This has been My Weird Prompts, available on Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back next week with another exploration of the obscure, the unusual, and the just plain weird. Until then, keep your pouches sealed and your encryption strong. Goodbye.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.